Log Talk Radio.
And that's right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Hour. I am your host, Jeremy York, joined once again by the coach, Mr. Haywood Hill, and also Mr. Reggie Walker. How we doing, guys?
Great, Jeremy.
All right.
Great.
Hey, Jeremy, how you doing?
Doing great. Good to have both you guys back on. Got the coach back from assignment now. And, you know, let's lead right off with that. The assignment we had you on, and it wasn't trying to run you out of town or nothing, but we know you're a lot more connected than we are. We had talked last week about a team going to Los Angeles, and we covered most of the basic things on it, but what were you able to find out about this?
Okay, let's get right into it. Lots to talk about with the move from Oakland to L.A. and teams that have transferred since then. One of the things I was able to find out from sources is that at some point in time, Oakland was promised a new stadium. This was a direct result of some structural damage that was done to the stadium due to an earthquake. The city has been back and forth. They're having some economical issues out there right now. So Oakland is getting a little restless with this whole thing about the promise that has been made but not yet kept. With that being said, one of the things that was entertained by the NFL, along with the Raiders organization, was to look at sharing the stadium with San Francisco, their new stadium. Part of the problem is what dates are you going to be able to get and how you're going to get the revenue from that when you already have a team that's already dominating that stadium. Another thing they looked at was going into L.A. One of the problems they have with L.A., and they have a couple of problems, believe it or not, one of those problems would be that the fact that they've been there and done that before. Let's start there. So Oakland is not new to L.A. The other problem that came up, or one of the concerns, is that there's been some issues with being able to facilitate a new facility, and it puts a strain on the actual city itself as well as the county when you're looking at it from a water sewage perspective. They already have a lot of large facilities out there, the Staples Center, some other things. And so unlike the state of Georgia, where we're a convention state, and although we use our facilities, we don't really use them on a daily basis like that, where you have a large number of people in daily throughout the city at that magnitude. So that's another issue that they're running into in trying to possibly make the move to L.A. Now, one of the things you're going to find interesting with that is that San Antonio comes into the mix. San Antonio comes into the mix, and it has been confirmed that the owner of the Oakland Raiders had an opportunity to have a small brief chat with the city officials in San Antonio. Right now, that is being carefully monitored by Mr. Jones and Mr. McNair. Mr. Jones being the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, Mr. McNair being the owner of the Houston Texans. So two is coming, but three is the crowd, because Ned placed them strategically in San Antonio, where Dallas has the northern part of the state and Houston has the southern part of the state. If they don't have to split revenue and they'll split a fan base. So they're not happy about it. They're already saying that if it comes up to vote for the owners to entertain us, that they're going to shoot it down. But here's the catch to that. The owner of the Oakland Raiders is also the chairman of the Finance Committee for the NFL. The Finance Committee is the group that looks at the hard numbers and look at realistic moves based on profit law and how it can benefit the organization of the NFL as a whole. Because he holds that as a trump card, it's going to be a huge fight and possibly a split if this does come to vote with the owners. So that's the report on the whole move with Oakland, L.A., and San Antonio jumping into the game.
Right, and that's that kind of segues into the second thing we were going to hit on is not just the potential for anybody to move to L.A., even though it looks like Oakland, but the fact that the Raiders personnel, like some of their front office, were in San Antonio over the weekend, and they just so happened to talk about maybe moving to there. Now, from what I heard, the mayor of San Antonio, I believe his son-in-law or something like that, works for the Raiders. So that's kind of how that whole meeting probably took place. But the Raiders didn't go just, you know, didn't go to Texas just to meet with these guys. They happened to be there for something else.
They were on other business. They were having to come.
But, you know, in all likelihood, what is the actual, you know, if what percentage, I guess, chance is there that the Oakland Raiders move to either L.A. or San Antonio?
Well, Jeremy, I think that they're going to push the L.A. market because what happens also on the flip side, this great debate on what's going to happen with Oakland is if they move them off of the coast to Texas, it seems to restructure some of the dynamics of the conferences. So that's another thing that has to be looked at as well when you're talking about logistics and how you play games and schedule games. How does that fit into the vast season?
Yeah, I think in all likelihood, we're just going to have to wait and see on this, as we do on a lot of different things. And just, you know, for everybody listening out there, not only do we appreciate you tuning in, but stay tuned for more on it in the upcoming weeks. And as soon as we hear something, we'll definitely let you know on it. But to transition into the next order of business, so to say, 49ers have lost two running backs this week to season-ending injuries, and that's Kendall Hunter to an ACL and LaMichael James to a shoulder. They did sign Alphonso Smith. Have either of you guys heard of Alphonso Smith?
I've heard of him. He is a player that he was an actual running back that played with the Arizona Cardinals. He'd been up for a couple of years, wasn't a very big impact player, was able to hold on to a lot of his ability to be good for special teams. And it kind of signed him as a body, if you will, to camp right now as they go through the process of evaluating the players that they do perform. Taking into consideration one of the things that San Francisco has right now that they're not worried about is a plethora of running backs. They get a lot more back after drafting him and bringing him in from his situation over in South Carolina in college with the knee injuries. They are projected to keep going in training camp, but will point to be the performer in that roster by week. As far as the other two guys they lost, again, you have Gore, and Gore is already there as the starter. They might require a little bit of him. Got a fourth round pick. One of their concerns right now is his ability to block in the passing game because it's becoming more passing now. So that's their concern, and it just going to kind of depends on what happens with it at that point.
Reggie, what do you think of them signing Alphonso Smith to try to make up for the loss of Hunter and James?
Well, I mean, I think Coach Hill pretty much said it all from a personnel perspective. I think at the end of the day, they will probably be combing the waiver wires when camp, you know, as camp kind of looms on. I was just sitting here thinking about even some of the possibilities of Jaquizz Rodgers and maybe some of these guys that, you know, become cap casualties or camp casualties. So I think, again, he's just filling a void right now. I don't know very much about him, but I think they'll still definitely take a look at some other guys once you start seeing some people released.
Yeah, definitely so. And as Coach Hill said, I think having Marcus Lattimore, who is kind of the sleeper, a lot of people forgot this kid was still around because he sat out all of last year. That's part of the reason they took him, is so that they could – you know, kind of groom him and bring him up the way they wanted to. But, I mean, this kid could be this year's Eddie Lacy because he was just ridiculously dynamic as a Gamecock in college. If he can even be half that effective in that kind of running game, you know, to balance out Frank Gore, the 49ers are probably right back in the championship mix here.
Right, and I know they're pretty glad because I know at one point they were trying to there was a lot of talk about possibly trading Lattimore and LaMichael James. So I guess that paid off for them to hold on and stockpile those guys after all.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the other thing we wanted to hit on as far as one of the bigger things this week, the Lions have tabled contract discussions with defensive lineman Ndamukong Suh until after the season. Now, I'll let you guys kind of weigh in on this, and then I'll kind of tell you what I took away from it.
Coach, I'm going to let you have it first. Go ahead, from a coach perspective.
Okay, from a coach's perspective, right, the best thing that Mr. Suh can do is just play football. It's the last year of his contract. From an organizational standpoint, you at least have that right now. I don't feel that they're not going to get the deal done. I think one of the issues right now is how, you know, how much of a distraction can this be as we're getting ready to go into the season A and B with a new head coach. So I think that it was a wise move by the Lions organization and their general manager and their management team to just wait, table this until after the season, because we need some results in some other areas right now. We need to focus on some other things right now.
All right. Well, from my perspective, Jeremy, I think it was kind of one of those situations I'll liken to Roddy White, or even a little bit more, probably a little bit more closer to the breast in Julio Jones. I'm expecting an extension from this guy before the season, you know, even really gets started, because he is not a guy that you want to hit free agency. And as far as I'm concerned, Ndamukong Suh, for all the antics that he's a part of, and I get why they're doing it, and I agree with Coach Hill, he just needs to just kind of be quiet and play ball. But I don't think you see him re-sign in Detroit. I think they played their card, and I think now you're going to get a lot of people kind of lining their dollars up for when this guy becomes a free agent. That's just me personally.
Yeah, that's actually exactly the way I saw it, is that the Lions made their play. In fact, they've made numerous plays. And at least from a perspective, from my perspective, it seems that the Lions are pretty much putting the play on him now. If you want to sign with us, here's the terms we've thrown out. If not, you know, maybe you should go somewhere, you know, somewhere elsewhere.
I think I think what Detroit has as a whole caused the fact that if his season is mediocre, and they're not known as a very good pass rushing team, they probably was ranked last, if not at the very bottom statistically overall in the NFL, but more especially in the current thing, they only had 30% sacks. I mean, he's good when he's getting out they're good at the run, but when it comes to just basically getting out to the quarterback, they suffer there. So I think that also plays a role in why he wasn't so quick to pull the trigger on it. And if they have to make moves in the offseason and or when the contract expires at the end of the season, they'll have something on their plate they can also use in bargaining or negotiating his contract for real.
Hey, Coach and Jeremy, question back out for you guys. How much do you guys think the disappointing, at least up to this point, the disappointing play of Nick Fairley plays into all of this? I mean, are the Lions now kind of looking like, hey, man, we thought we was going to have that 1-2 punch, and now we don't necessarily have it? So we got to start getting ourselves together to go after somebody else, maybe that can kind of turn the tides here.
Great question, Reggie. I actually think that that's exactly what they're doing. I think with Fairley, his injuries, he's been quite injury prone most of his time there in the last couple of seasons with Troy. The mediocre play across the board was not as far as their sacks and where they rank in the NFL gives them the toughest bargaining chip. I think now if they want to be able to, if the players who are at the end of their contracts or looking to extensions of the contract, they have to have that type of season this year so they have something to negotiate with.
Yeah, I've felt that for years Detroit's tried to swing for the fences, and they're not even getting it out of the infield a lot of times. They get a lot of fan excitement and everything, but yeah, I think they tried to go for the 1-2 punch, and instead they got was a couple jabs in on this particular fight. I do think that if Suh doesn't want to re-sign there, or he feels like he was slighted, or whatever, and Ndamukong can come up with as to why they may not like him or whatever it is. At the end of the day, I think Detroit's going to kind of do a house cleaning in the next year or so and try to go in a different direction.
Yeah, I think they're one of the higher salary teams, and I, you know, so yeah, I can definitely see that happen. I mean, other than Megatron and maybe a couple of others, I think everybody's job is going to be kind of up for grabs at that point.
Yeah, I believe so. And going from one team that spent a lot of money on stars to another that tried to do it this year, we'll see how it pans out. Oakland Raiders GM Reggie McKenzie has compared rookie linebacker Khalil Mack to Clay Matthews. Reggie, I'll start with you on this. Does Khalil Mack compare to Clay Matthews?
I wouldn't be shy to say yes. I mean, considering what he did in college, and I have seen some of the highlights for him, you know, just flying around, and you never really know till the season starts. But from what I've seen, why not? I mean, why can't he be a lot better than that guy? He certainly has the tools. He certainly has the speed, the aggression. I think that might have been spot on by Mr. McKenzie.
All right, Coach.
I actually agree with Reggie on this. Looking at it from a player personnel and a scouting point of view, one of the things that I was always high on this kid in the draft. As you know, I always felt that overall, when you're looking at the ability of a player and what else he can add to your organization outside of just being position-specific, okay? Now, mind you, not only can he come off the edge and play as a defensive end, but he also can play linebacker. So I think knowing Mr. McKenzie and some of that process and what goes into scouting and players from his time in Green Bay, I think that he actually is probably even better than Clay Matthews because he can do two things. Clay is a play edge guy. He's a true linebacker, whereas this kid can actually play linebacker and defensive end. So, it's, you know, I think, you know, that Mr. McKenzie, his rich knowledge on scouting players was dead on when he said from a time to the fact that they have that innate ability to get after quarterback, something that you just can't coach, that he's right on point with the comparison.
Yeah, and I guess I'm going to take the high road or the easy out here and say I haven't seen Khalil Mack play enough, whether it be on film or in person or even on television, to really say if he compares, but if Reggie McKenzie says so, and if you guys both agree on it, then I guess the consensus is maybe this kid is the next Clay Matthews.
Yeah, my only concern with guys is that that he doesn't try to, as most rookies do, he tries to overexert himself to prove his ability to be in the league. It's already been proven with him that as you are now, the kid is finding the right situation, making sure that he doesn't overextend himself, and more importantly, getting healthy all year.
Yeah, and that was my concern too, Coach. Especially that when you add to that mix that he was such a high draft pick that did not come out of a Division I school, no matter where he was on the draft board. I mean, that may make him actually overexert himself as well. But overall, man, I think he was definitely the solid pick up at that area. So I'm looking for big things out of him this year.
And from one team looking for big results to another team looking for big results but didn't get them, the Colts have released running back Chris Rainey, and he kind of jumped out of nowhere last year with the Buccaneers. The kid runs really well, but he wasn't released as a cap casualty or anything else except for this was a violation of team rules. And, Coach, we'll start with you. How big of a violation does it need to be to release a kid like this?
Well, a lot of times when you find players that are carrying baggage, and, you know, and all players carry something, but in this case, when you carry excessive baggage, we must back up and look at his playing career to Pittsburgh, where he was released as a result of having a domestic violence charge with an altercation with a woman over a cell phone. You know, now it comes into the Colts organization, and they clearly, you know, let him know that, you know, we have a zero tolerance policy for this. You know, you already have a history of some things that have happened, and now, you know, with this whole thing that comes up, you know, I mean, I think it was just a no-brainer for them to go ahead and get their losses now versus trying to damage control the process.
And, you know, Reggie, from a fan perspective, Is it kind of easy to accept when a team releases somebody for a violation of team rules? Is it easier to accept that over a cap casualty, or how does that weigh in?
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. I mean, and I'll give you a case in point. Me and a lot of other fans, and you guys have heard me say it 1,000 times, I was a little upset about the cap casualty behind John Abraham. And a lot of us as fans didn't understand why they would release somebody like that. But then in lieu of his recent activity and the fact that he got in trouble, you know, here for some of the same things, again, I keep thinking back to some of the things Coach Hill has said often, is you never really know what's going on behind the scenes. So Darius Johnson is another. You know, everybody was upset, and, oh, we let him go because of a DUI. No, the guy didn't want to play football anymore. He just said, hey, we're parting ways. But, yes, it's definitely easier, and it's good for the team. I mean, if whatever he did required them to let him go, then so be it. I mean, and I think a lot of fans feel that way.
Yeah, the John Abraham case, I mean, especially here lately, you know, for the most part, we just wish that you know, if John needs help, that he can seek help for his issues, because it seems like the more and more we learn about his particular issue, just kind of the worse it's kind of made him look. But as far as Chris Rainey and violating the team rules, I mean, the Colts are really looking for a running back, and he could have really fit in well with Trent Richardson. But, I mean, you know, a rule's a rule, and you know, just like if Andrew Luck or any of those guys, or even, you know, newly acquired Akeem Nicks, if they go over a certain line, you got to make an example just to let the rest of the guys know, you know, we run a tight ship.
Well, on top of that, the other thing to keep in mind is their owner is still not out of the woods right now. So they don't want to be bringing any extra attention to their team right now, so. That could have also been, you know, a situation as well.
Yeah, that's true. Go ahead.
Also, Darren, I'd like to point out, if you go back and look at Mr. Chad Johnson's situation in Miami, the transition into Miami, you know, there were some things that were already on the table, you know, with him coming there. And if I'm not mistaken, it was on either A Football Life or something. One of the shows that they had where they exclusively showed him sitting down talking with the head coach in his office, and he clearly made it known that, you know, based on recent activities and past history here in Miami, it cannot be accepted. And the first time it came to fruition, at least to the public's eye, was with his wife and the whole domestic violence situation. And not only did it remove him from Miami, it removed him from the NFL.
Right, and it's funny you mentioned Chad Johnson. I do got to throw in this quick little tidbit I learned a few minutes before airtime. Chad Johnson has opened his mouth again with another fun comment. You know, he's up in the Canadian leagues. But he said that he would like to date country music star Taylor Swift just to see what kind of breakup song she could write about him.
Vintage Chad, I mean... The guy's having a good time, man. I mean, that's the one thing I do like about his personality. You never really know what he's going to say. Hugging Rap, talk about Taylor Swift.
I mean, I thought it was great. It just, you know, there's always backlash, and there's always good things about Taylor Swift. She's very talented. She wins a lot of awards. But, yeah, this is classic Chad being Chad, and, you know, if he's not going to have an elaborate celebration after a touchdown, then he's probably going to give you a good soundbite.
Absolutely. Gotta love it.
But I guess to get back more on the serious side, Packers have extended Jordy Nelson's contract to a four years, $39 million with a $11.5 million signing bonus. What do you guys think about this new deal?
Wow, from a fan perspective, I think it'd be fitting for somebody like, for what Jordy Nelson has done for that organization. I mean, the guy just catches passes. I mean, what else can you say as a fan? So, I think congratulations, Mr. Nelson. You deserve it on my behalf.
Well, and Coach, given all the stuff you know and some of the connections especially, is this deal as good for the Packers as it is for Jordy Nelson?
Absolutely, guys. It's a great deal for the Green Bay Packers organization. One thing that Green Bay is known for is that they don't just readily give away money. I mean, every player that has gotten a big contract has been a player that most definitely put up the numbers, and that's what I want to talk about as we look at Mr. Nelson's contract. If I'm not mistaken, last year, over the last couple of years, he's been the number two receiver overall in stats. He by far was the one to go into this year. Rumors has that he wanted $10 million. He ended up right at 8 plus at $11 million, $11.5 million guaranteed signing bonus. So he is in a good position right now. The numbers have been there. And at one point in time when the receiving core was a little suspect, not due to talent but just due to injuries, he towed the line, and he kept that team in a lot of games with catches that he made at critical third downs. So, you know, Aaron had him there as a go-to guy, and when his number was called, he performed.
Yeah, I mean, I think from every perspective you could look at this, this kid deserved every bit of what he's getting, and he really is the all-star. I mean, he's up there with Randall Cobb for sure, but, I mean, it's hard to say that he's not the number one target up there instead of Randall Cobb, but it surely makes Aaron Rodgers' day very, very easy having both these guys on the roster.
Right. The one thing I like about Will is the fact that he's a great, solid, fundamental player. He doesn't give you any extra wiggle. He's not flamboyant. He knows how to run routes well. He's a big body, and he makes tough catches. And those are the things that also you have to look at when you're factoring in, you know, when we have to put this money out over a long period of time, do we see enough of that consistently on film, in practice, in big games, third down situations, and when it has to count the most, when we have to score, does he produce that each and every time? And he does.
Yeah, and to transition, you know, as we're still kind of staying on the lighter side of this week's sport news, Saints quarterback Drew Brees says he can play for another 10 years. And the NFL, I'm not going to say they're purposely going after him, but he did reveal a few days later that even though he feels like he's not being targeted by the NFL, he was drug tested randomly with fun air quotes since you can only hear us, not see us. He was randomly drug tested twice in like 10 days or so after he made this statement.
Yeah, that was interesting, and I find it quite intriguing that what are the odds of a player after making that statement with all the number of players that you have in National Football League and the scientific method that they use to randomly pick players for drug testing that you come up twice in 10 days? I found it quite intriguing that happened after that statement. And also, take consideration that New Orleans was carrying a dark cloud with the bounty situation as well as the suspension of their head coach. So I think that the statement probably drew some attention to him, and maybe it was just the luck of the draw that he got it twice in days. Who knows? We'll never know all of that, but it was quite intriguing.
Yeah, it's just funny, and you know, especially since we're going to talk about the Falcons on the the next segment. It's just funny to see one of their biggest rivals, the Saints, and the biggest player there, Drew Brees, kind of get caught up in maybe overextending himself and talking about, you know, how good he thinks he is.
Yeah, it made me happy that you said it, actually. That's good bulletin board material.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, for a young Falcons defense that is building up, and, you know, we'll get more into it in the next segment, but you know, since we get to see the Falcons play quite a bit in the home market here, it gives them the same target to go after for the next 10 years.
Yeah, but you know, like they say, you are what your coach is. He's a reflection, and that's the one thing I can say about all of those guys at New Orleans and teams like New Orleans and their fans, for that matter. They take on the attitudes of their coaches. Sean Payton is, you know, He's confident. So, I mean, it's just a reflection of what that organization puts out there.
Yeah,
also, I like to add, as a footnote, guys, is that you have to also think that it gives him something to shoot for and a goal. If he is able to play another 10 years, keeps his arm, his throwing arm and his accuracy down, he will be the first player, I think, at quarterback at 45. There are two right now sitting currently at 44 that actually played in active games, and that was Warren Moon and Mr. DeBerg. So he wants to probably keep company with those guys and not surpass them as to why he probably made a statement as well.
Yeah, I don't doubt that Drew Brees could play until he's 45. I mean, he doesn't get hit a whole lot. I mean, a lot of other guys get hit a lot, but if you look in his body of work, even back into San Diego, I mean, this guy just doesn't get hit a whole lot. And if you're not taking that kind of abuse and you're on kind of a fun offensive team like the Saints, I mean, really, he could play another 10 years.
Well, I bet my Atlanta Falcons defense this year have something to say about that, Mr. Jeremy. But we'll talk about that next hour.
Well, I'd like to ask the last little tidbit on Mr. Brees, that he definitely has a newfound energy in his offensive line, because they're going to really have to be the Secret Service in protecting him on Sundays now.
Yeah, right. They may have to put up a privacy fence based off the way the rest of the NFC South is reloaded this offseason. But to stay in the NFC South, guard Carl Nix and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have agreed to mutually part ways. Carl Nix was part of the MRSA outbreak, with Lawrence Tynes, the kicker, also being affected. Tynes has already gone from the organization, last I heard, but... you know, Carl Nix was a real good player. I believe he was a Saint before he signed with the Buccaneers, but it's just kind of an unfortunate situation, the way the whole MRSA thing kind of played out, and I didn't necessarily agree with the way the Bucs did it, but, you know, it is what it is. What do you guys take away from this?
Again, I personally think it's another one of those situations, you know, like Chris Knee, where these guys, you know, when your health is being challenged, and maybe if you don't see the benefit and continue with it to risk your life, I think, you know, that these are the types of things that happen. So again, I good best of luck to him. I hate for such a he was a good player, and I hate to see him go out this way. But I certainly understand from a personal perspective.
From coach. You know, wanted to coach him, he likes him as a person, he likes him even more as a football player. Here are the hard numbers. He was projected to make, I think, $6 or $7 million this year on the contract. I think after spending time with his agent, after going back and forth and looking at second and third opinions, the injury that I think he suffers from, or he sustained, that was a structural damage issue is turned. So with that being the case, he only felt that he could come back at about 70%. He could not even give them what he gave the organization last year, you know, just basically fighting through it. And it comes a point at a time that you have to start looking at, you know, again, just to, you know, what Reggie said earlier, you have to start looking at the health of this thing. And that's one of the things that you have to take into consideration. Also, a footnote, turf toe, a lot of MCL or XL can be debilitating and can be ending. If you go back and look at some great players that have played in the National Football League, one player in particular I want to point to is Deion Sanders, what ended his career. So, again, though, I'm sure he's made some wise investment. He has not 100% closed the door on football, but I think it's pushed up 3/4 shut right now.
Yeah, and, you know, we wish the best for Carl Nix. I actually enjoyed watching him play, and you know, I guess it sounds like a cliche answer and all, but, I mean, he really was a very good guard. He was helped trying to turn this Buccaneers team around. Their offensive line has had a lot of issues lately, but, you know, maybe he can go home and rehab this and really get some good treatment and possibly make a comeback one day.
Yeah, I wish him the best of luck.
But the last thing we really want to hit on, and it's kind of been a hot-button issue, as practically everybody else is talking about it. It just so happens to be our turn in the week to talk about it. But the Stephen A. Smith suspension by ESPN for, I guess, the way he delivered what he was trying to say is from what I gather. I kind of agree with what a lot of people have said. I'm not quite sure why he's getting the suspension he has, but I feel like maybe he was trying to put it one way and it was taken another, and some of his fellow coworkers had attacked him through social media about it instead of just clearly calling him. So he did get a one-week suspension. You guys hear anything else about this?
I personally haven't heard anything else. I'm like you. I'm in the same boat with you, Jeremy. I didn't really understand. I did watch his comments. I know that he clearly stated that he was against domestic violence in all forms, and he was just clearly offering an objective opinion, which is something that he has always done and has made a good living with it. You know, good living at it on with Skip Bayless there. So I didn't really understand it. And certainly, hopefully, he'll be back soon is all I can say.
What I like to add to that, guys, is let's talk the hard facts. He is a great commentator. He's very well respected in his field, in his profession. But more importantly, he forces you to think. And I think what he was saying in that comment is that so often times it is just projected that the band is, you know, aggressive in these things, and a lot of times you don't see what's taking place. Now, again, I was set forth by saying I'm against all domestic violence off the top, but I think when you're starting to look at situations where if the gentleman's being attacked, and let's say he's in close quarters and maybe his exit route is behind that aggression on the other side to get to the door, what do you do with those type of things? So I think at some given point in time, you know, I've always said this before, and I tell it to players now, as a coach, you know, you are always going to be guilty wherever you go. So you have to tread light in all situations. And, again, you know, him pointing to the Rice incident and that situation, that one could have been handled differently. However, what happens if, and I like to use this as a hypothetical for you guys to chime in on, you're driving down the highway at 70 miles an hour. And your significant other have a debate about something. She gets so frustrated, just over, open-handedly, and smacks you in the face, the mouth. You know, now side swipe, I'm talking about right down the middle. At this point, what do you do with that? Second thing you do, let's say you pull over at a local convenience or a gas station. You get out, around, wherever, you open the door, you help her out of the car. And you began to explain in a very passionate way what could have happened. I could have hit somebody could have hit us. You know, some lives could have been lost. But the people, the patrons that are walking down the store, the people that pull up only see a very aggravated individual that seems to be overshadowing someone that seems to be that's capable of taking care of themselves. They didn't see that. So I think in all of these cases, you got to start looking at getting the whole story versus edited versions of stories and then kind of, you know, let the chips fall where they may. But again, I most definitely want to place, as I did in the beginning of that comment and as this comment, I'm against all the domestic violence. But what do you do if the situation is there and no one saw it or a few people saw it but not the masses?
Well, from my perspective, and Jeremy, pardon me here, I think that comes with the territory, Coach. I mean, when you're high profile, obviously, anything that you do is going to be amplified 20 times. I think these are things now, and what Stephen A. Smith has done so eloquently is now raising awareness that maybe the NFL and other leagues and other agents and other family members have to now start to you know, put in the heads of their high-profile family members and athletes. It's obviously something that you know, once it hits the airwaves, it becomes a hot mess, and they've just now got to find ways to sustain and contain it.
Yeah, and as far as his suspension, I've said before that I feel like it's because it was brought to such a high profile light, thanks to a lot of his coworkers and some of the other people in the media that just, you know, went after him on social media and just really blew this into a way bigger thing than it really was. If you go back and listen to the comments, to me, it seems like he's trying to, you know, we all get kind of tongue-tied and can't quite figure out how to say what we're thinking and make it come out right, and I think he just kept rambling, hoping that it would come out the right way, and when it didn't, it ended up blowing up in front of him, and, you know, he'll serve his suspension, and he'll quietly, you know, come back in and be his normal self, I think, but I think it'll take him a couple weeks to warm back up, and like you guys said, he was hired to kind of be the outspoken analyst that he is, and then all
Absolutely.
Of a sudden, you get something like this, and you're like, you're suspending him for what you hired him for, are you not?
Absolutely, and if you watch Stephen A. Smith, I would not be surprised if ESPN approached him and said, "Hey, we need you to do a formal apology," and he said, "Absolutely not." So that's what you hired me for. You can't ask a dog to not be a dog, or ask a tiger to not be a tiger. So, I mean, again, it's a fine line to walk.
I agree, and one other thing I'd like to add, guys, to that comment that I made in the hypothetical that I brought to the table for us to discuss is, let's just say this player A, has this situation to happen to him in his personal home, and his wife or his significant other is being very aggressive, physically aggressive, and he calls local law enforcement. When they get there, how much is going to believe unless he has physical injuries? I mean, he's bleeding profusely from his hand, from being hit in the head with, you know, a bottle of candlestick holder, that he's going to actually believe that this massive individual let this little woman do all of this to him. You know,
i.e. Tiger Woods, i.e. Jay-Z and Beyonce. I mean, that was a salon, excuse me. I mean, that's a primary example, Coach. I agree with you.
Yeah, that's actually an example that's been brought up before, is the Jay-Z thing, and it kind of's in a similar boat here. You know, like you're saying, Coach, if you're in a car or an elevator even, and there's nowhere that you know, it's not a fight or flight at this point. There's only a fend off or fight, because you can't go anywhere else. You're stuck in the situation, at least until the door is open.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as a final on this, I think that what people are looking at are the odds, though, gentlemen. I mean, let's just be real. How often is it really a situation like a Jay-Z and Solange, where he's noticeably being attacked and not responding, at least not like he could have, being the massive individual he is compared to her? I mean, on most occasions, it is quite the opposite. So, I mean, I think that's where everybody's kind of going with it.
Yeah, I think so. And just for the sake of time, you know, clearly this will play out over the next couple weeks anyway. And in case something does happen to Stephen A. Smith, Stephen, you always have a job here at End Zone, Falcon Zone, in case you want to come on and be just as outspoken as you'd like to be. But, yeah, overall, I think this is going to play out pretty well. And Stephen will take his punishment. It's going to be just like Ray Rice, which, you know, started this whole thing. His issue is what got Stephen to say what he did. They're both going to take their punishment like men, and they're going to, you know, come out smelling like a rose at the end of this.
Absolutely.
But last thing I wanted to hit real quick before we get into the Falcons on the other side here is real quickly just gauge you guys' reactions on Brady Quinn is retiring from football. But don't be too sad for Brady Quinn, because he is going to be a Fox college and NFL analyst.
Right. I kind of see it like the Tim Tebow situation. I mean, he didn't quite put up the numbers and get the accolades that he thought, and I think that's a smart move on his behalf. I mean, you got to know when to win to say when. You know, if you're not getting the coverage or the time that you think you're supposed to get, you know, sometimes you just got to move on to greener pastures, if you will.
I'm definitely wishing luck in his newfound career, and I hope he has a lot of longevity in it.
Yeah, definitely. And that's going to do it for the End Zone portion. We'll see you guys on the next side of the segment with Falcon Zone.
Hi, Jeremy the Impact York here from Mellow Mushroom. Are you looking for a great family-friendly restaurant with food that is great and healthy? Drop by the Mellow Mushroom. They use the freshest ingredients to make everything on their amazing menu. Pizzas, calzones, salads, and more, plus daily drink specials. Go to mellowmushroom.com to find the location nearest you. Jeremy the Impact York from Endzone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with Endzone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business. Hey, Zoners, it's Jeremy the Impact York. Are you looking for a dinner full of flavor with a little kick? Then Tequila Mexican Restaurant is your destination for authentic Mexican food and drinks. Make sure to come by on the weekends for live music on the patio and bring all your friends for a good time. With locations in Dallas and Hiram, they are ready to dish out their great food and more. And that's right, we are here for the Falcon Zone segment. Appreciate you coming back with us. I am your host, Jeremy York, joined once again by Mr. Reggie Walker and Coach Haywood Hill.
Yes, sir.
And we want to start out, I was going to start out talking about one key injury, but one actually just presented itself in front of me, thanks to Mr. D. Orlando Ledbetter of the AJC. Falcons safety Dez Southward has a knee injury, and he's going to miss about a week of time. How does this factor into the Falcons' new scheme?
Well, I mean, it's obviously going to hurt him because he was definitely expected to play a significant role in the revamp, but I do know they picked up another veteran safety in the offseason that they kind of felt like would be the starter, and they would just kind of rotate Mr. Southward in. So it's a big injury, you know, from a player's perspective or from a time perspective, but I think he'll be okay.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think they're going to lose too much. I mean, he's fitting into the scheme, but again, there were going to probably be some question marks once they got to preseason anyway with some things. I think that, you know, welcome to the National Football League. I mean, I think that's what happens to a lot of college players when they first come in. They don't realize, and again, I'm not saying that this is his case, but what you find with a lot of the rookie players when they come into the league, it's just that transition from college into pro and that level of intensity that's there. So you have injuries all over. You just try to minimize them as much as you can, get him healthy quick, and get him onto the field.
Yeah, I think he'll be okay. And I believe, Reggie, you were talking about Dwight Lowry was probably who they brought in to start right off at free safety. But, yeah, Southward's going to miss a little bit of time. I think he's going to be okay. But, once again, this is why you should tune into us every week, because we carry the breaking news just like everybody else, except for we're going to have it faster.
Absolutely.
But the injury that we wanted to actually start off with was to running back Steven Jackson. And even though this may seem to sound like a repeat from last year, he is hurt once again, and this time it's a hamstring injury, and it's going to keep him out right around, you know, till the start of the regular season. Is this actually a significant injury, or is this just like the Southward one, where it's just, you know, not really going to factor in all that much?
Well, I mean, Mr. Jackson, unfortunately, has had a history of these types of injuries. I think now is where you start to see where Devontae Freeman and Anton Smith start to factor, as well as Jaquizz Rodgers, get to factor into taking some of those starting snaps, which was kind of projected a lot anyway. So it's just more of the same, unfortunately, for Steven.
I'm not quite sure how his contract is structured, but you best believe that Atlanta's going to be looking and watching this closely. They looked at what they were hoping to get out of him last year that did not come to fruition, and now they're in a position, you know, going into, you know, trying to get right into the season, you know, the hamstring. So I think the running back quarterback they have there now has a great opportunity to make a statement, and I think with the position of the Falcons in this year with, you know, a must-win season, you know, I think that, you know, it's going to be quite interesting what they do at running back, but I don't think they'll waste any time to make it through the next year.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed watching Steven Jackson run, especially in St. Louis. He was my type of runner as far as the way the style he liked to use, and it's just it kind of saddens me sometimes that he keeps getting kind of dinged up and injured. But I mean, he is, you know, he's at that magical plateau age, right around 30 or so. I believe he's just north of it, where as a running back, sometimes it's just the injuries mount up and you're done at this point. And, you know, we hope he keeps playing, at least for the sake of the Falcons or everything, but this is also why they drafted Devontae Freeman. And if anything, this is going to help Jaquizz Rodgers, to me, keep a place on the team. I felt like Rodgers was going to be on his way out because Freeman was going to take his job, but now you kind of have to hang on to him just to have two options back there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it definitely helps Mr. Rodgers out. And unfortunately, like you, I like Steven Jackson's style, but his style has caught up with him. I mean, like it does with most players, when you're that bruising type of back that kind of take on hits and so forth and so on, it starts to catch up with you.
I do have a quick question, guys, and I don't know if they do. I don't know if you've seen even a little of this in training camp. I'm not quite sure. But if he does not come back 100% and or breaks into the actual backcourt, which that's what he has known for, do they possibly, Reggie, look at entertaining him in some format because he does have the body size and he does have good pass pro skills?
Yeah, maybe if they want to kind of hold on to him, and especially make sure that they take advantage of the other amount of money that they're paying him. But I don't know. I mean, he's kind of one of those guys where, you know, he's not going to come in gimpy. He needs to be 100%. And I think that with what they have assembled in the backfield, those guys are going to give Atlanta the opportunity to kind of bring him back slowly and make sure he is 100% when they do put him on the field. I don't think they risk him at the fullback position to possibly lose him longer.
Okay.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. But on to more positive things from Flowery Branch. You know, we had broke down the center position a couple weeks back, and we felt that Joe Hawley pretty much had it locked up like he has past couple years, and that Peter Kontz was going to be a solid backup, you know, especially a good second option. He can also play somewhere else, you know, other places, guard, tackle. But apparently in the last few practices, this thing has become an all-out battle to take over the starting center position. I mean, do you guys favor one guy over the other?
I personally favor Joe Hawley out of all of them, simply because Joe Hawley fits that nasty mentality that we're starting to see out of this offensive line. There have been quite a few scuffles in practice with Mr. Matthews, who I now have to digress on. But
yeah, you're welcome, by the way. I wanted to make sure to send you that story.
I wanted to put it out there before you did. But I think Hawley fits Mike Tyson's style. I mean, Peter Kontz had his opportunity to kind of take that position last year and didn't quite pan out. Not to say that he can't recover this year, but I personally am a fan of Mr. Hawley.
For myself, I agree. I think that he that he's paid his dues to most definitely be projected as the starter. The player behind him that's really pushed him, I think he'll be the future, and I think Greg is going to add the value. It's what you said earlier, that he can play other positions. So I don't necessarily see him not getting some playing time, but I think it's a great luxury when you can have your backup center play other positions, still help you in your offensive line, and immediately plug into center if necessary.
Yeah, and, you know, just for the sake of argument, I'll take Peter Kahn's in this. He's actually a little bigger. I think he's got him by a couple pounds and a couple inches. And if he's actually going to come out and compete like this, even though he is the guy of the future, you know what? All power to him. If he can come take this job, then come take it, because then you're going to make, you know, you're going to make Joe Hawley fight harder, and this is going to become an all-out battle for this position.
Well, the other thing to factor into this is what Mr. Ryan says about this situation, or has to say about that decision. He obviously played a lot more comfortable with Joe Hawley at the center. You got to know that factors into it as well, especially considering we were such a turnstile last year at the offensive line. So I'm interested to see how it pans out, but I'm hoping Mr. Hawley comes out on top personally.
Yeah, definitely so. And as we transition into the next order of business here, this week they started the first padded practices, the practices where they actually put on the pads and start doing a little bit more contact and everything. First, Coach, I want to get your perspective on this, because supposedly HBO asked them to do the Oklahoma drill for their cameras. For those who don't know what it is, what is the Oklahoma drill?
It is a brutal drill. basically, it's a very physical drill where you're taking, you know, people and you're kind of basically crowding them up, and then you're just going right at it. But I don't foresee the Falcons doing anything like that. Maybe something similar, but not true Oklahoma, where you're really just masking it up, because you're talking about million-dollar players on the field. They can't afford, especially with what you're seeing now happening early in training camp and losing players for the whole season. So I think they'll give them something for TV, but I doubt they're going to give them the true Oklahoma drill for TV.
Right, I agree. I mean, I think if anything, they've been asked to do it because of this, you know, this creed to now play tougher, stronger, meaner. So it kind of fits into that mold, but I agree with Coach. I don't think they're going to go overboard with it. I think they're going to be smart about it.
I'll go this far and say this, if I may, and I'll interject this. If you were to go try to run true Oklahoma with those type of players and the attention and their ability and speed and size and strength, you would easily lose 10 players in 3 days. So I don't foresee them even consider. I think it was nice to throw the term around, but as you make it applicable to practice, I think all the coaches had a good laugh.
Yeah, I think just for the sake of not just HBO and TV, but, yeah, they just it goes into this toughness thing and seeing where everybody's at. And it is a brutal drill. I've even heard my dad tell stories of just playing in high school where sometimes you'd go through two or three helmets in one practice just from that one drill, which is a whole nother issue, I guess. But speaking of drills, defensive lineman Croy Bierman, who my mom wanted to bring up this week and said she enjoys watching him on many reality shows. Apparently, he's quite entertaining. But Croy Bierman is enjoying the offense of the outside linebacker drills. You know, in this new defensive scheme, he's going to have his hand in the dirt sometimes on the front line, and sometimes he's going to drift back into that second line.
Yeah, I think when you think about Croy Bierman's skills, I think this actually fits him better than being considered a defensive end. So I think that's a great move for him. I think that was always in the cards. Based on how they drafted, they picked up Hageman, and they know they have Massaquoi and Tyson Jackson up there too, as well as Paul Salada anchor the front line. I think you're gonna see this guy wreck some havoc from that outside linebacker's position. Not to mention, he does have the speed and the cover skills to cover your tight ends and your backs out of the backfield.
Here's the hidden part of this from a coach's perspective. One of two things is happening. One, they're either starting to see that he doesn't fit in the vast scheme of things on the front line, and two, they want to test his speed from a distance. You really can't do that if he's coming off the edge because he immediately faces impact and engaging with the player with a violent push or, you know, bull rush or trying to cut the edge. But now that you're moving to linebacker, you can see how well he can move. And if I'm not mistaken, it was an Achilles that he tore last year. Am I correct, Reggie?
Absolutely, it sure was. And I was going to ask you whether there's injury factor into that as well.
Right. And so now what the coaches are doing, and I'm just telling you guys as a coach, what they're looking at now and moving him to that position is, A, we're not quite sure if it's strong enough to support the weight and him being able to be very effective coming off the edge. But now we put him in space. Let's see how he cuts on it. Let's see if he really has the speed. Can he transition in the pass, in the passing game and coverage? And we're going to really see if he can, if he's as healthy as it needs to be able to give him a chance to compete again as a defensive end. So I think that, you know, right now, what they have up front and what they're capable of doing, this might be his new position if he can sustain that position. So that's going to be the question. You know, has he truly recovered from the injury enough, and can he really do this in space? So then to see if they even warrant him a shot now. It's going to be kind of tough on him. It's going to be different, but I think he sees some of the writing on the wall as well. And if you go back and you look at some of the things we talked about earlier with the Falcons and some of the moves that were even made on the offensive lineman side, you know, you had, you know, one defensive lineman that jumped over, if not two, that jumped over to the offensive side because they saw the writing on the wall even before they got in training camp.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that they are trying to test him here and see how he's coming back from that injury. And also, like you said, as not necessarily skills diminish, but if you're really deep in one area, you want to try to see who can transition to another spot. And, I mean, he could very much play both these positions, especially in this chaotic new defensive scheme they're going to actually try this year. But, you know, we'll just have to –
you got to wonder, too, how the Sean Weatherspoon injury factors into this as well. Because they definitely are one linebacker short. So, I mean, maybe that gives somebody else an opportunity. They're looking at somebody else to kind of move a little bit more inside and see if he can maybe fill that position.
Right. And it's funny you say they're a linebacker short because they did sign Pat Angerer, who is a linebacker veteran of the league. They signed wide receiver Jabin Sombrano and Jeremy Ebert as well, and they also waived Darius Johnson. Do you see either of these as big-time things, or are they just filling out the roster for practice sake right now?
I think they're just filling out the roster. I mean, Pat Angerer, I think, is going to be around. I mean, you always want that veteran presence, and Atlanta also has a tremendously young linebacking core compared to the rest of the league, so I think he'll stick. But I think, you know, from a receiver perspective, obviously Darius Johnson retiring from football brought about the opportunity for these other two guys. But I'm sure Atlanta's going to be watching the waiver wire to see, you know, what other veteran wide receivers get released during the year or during training camp. So that's what I think is going to happen with those guys. They're just filling out the roster right now.
I agree. I think that they're making those moves just to make sure that they have not just quantity but quality individuals in camp that they can realistically look at as they get ready to go and go through the releasing process, that they make sure that they are having those quality people in place and that they're having a productive training camp as a result of it.
And the odd thing about all this is I swear, I just want to throw out there, if D. Orlando Ledbetter of the AJC and Falcons beat writer is actually listening to the show, I wish he would call in instead of just posting as we talk about things. He just posted a thing on Twitter saying that Falcons linebacker Pat Angerer is out with a concussion right now as we just talk about him.
Wow. So once again.
I mean, he is 2 for 2 in the show today. I wish he would just call in.
Right.
Wow.
It sounds like we're running neck and neck with him, guys.
I think we are. Like I said, you know, and by all means, Mr. Ledbetter, if you'd want to call in, we'd love to have you on and talk about some of these things because apparently we're talking about the same stuff. But you know, this weekend was opening weekend up at Flowery Branch as far as letting the fans in to see things, and it was Youth Weekend. I know, Reggie, you had talked about you were going to try to head up there. Did you get a chance to go up there? Or, Coach, did you get a chance to head up there as well?
Oh, I apologize.
No, sir,
I was on mute, Jeremy. Unfortunately, business has taken a front seat, so I haven't been able to get up there, but I have spoken to some friends that have gone up there, and they like what they see so far. I mean, they're definitely clamoring about the heightened level of physicality. I think some of the cameras, you know, are starting to roll for Hard Knocks. So I'm definitely looking. If nothing else, I'll get the Friday Night Lights.
No, Jeremy, I haven't had an opportunity to visit the Falcons training camp as of yet. Again, like Reginald, I've had some constituents that have gone up saying the same thing, that it's, you know, it's been the atmosphere and the environment has changed in Flowery Branch as far as what players are expected to do, and some energy and you know, that's floating around, and you can feel the excitement in there.
Yeah, definitely so. And if you did get a chance to go up this weekend, obviously the three of us were not able to for a lot of things that come up. They were offering free skin health screens and offering tips as well, because Harper LaBelle, who is on 92.9 The Game on the weekends and has also been on our show a handful of times, was asking one of the experts up there about tips about being in the sun. And they were giving out some great tips about protecting your skin. And just saying in general, everybody should get screened skin-wise at least you know, once or so, and as you get older, definitely more and more to try to protect yourself.
Absolutely. There has been a heightened amount of that going on here lately, and along with that and anything else, it's just important to make sure you go in and have yourself checked out.
And as we – sorry. Go ahead.
No, I said I agree. I think that, you know, that they had – that they were adding this health component to training camp was a very good thing to do for the community as well.
Yeah, they're definitely – I don't know if they heard earlier shows we had done, but they're definitely trying to be more fan-friendly and get out there and make those connections. And I guess as we wind down for the Falcon Zone segment, Reggie, I'll give you the option here. Do you want to take a crack at this week's trivia question first, or do you want to talk about the latest Falcon to retire?
I'm gonna take trivia for 300 there, Jeremy. You got me down 2-1-2, I believe.
And Coach, feel free to take a stab at it as well. Who was the last Falcon to lead the league in interceptions? And last year, the overall team leader was William Moore, who had 3. But when was the last time a Falcon player led the entire NFL in interceptions? Who was
it? I'm going to go with the safe conservative bet and say Mr. Deion Sanders.
Likewise. I would think it would be Mr. Sanders as well.
Funny enough, it was not Deion Sanders. He never led the league in interceptions in any season in his career, actually. To go all the way back to 1988, the last Falcon to lead the team or to lead the league in interceptions was Scott Case, who had 10.
Wow. That was going to actually be my second choice.
That was my second. That was my second choice. My second choice. But I thought, well, wow, you know, Scott Case, if I'm not mistaken, was a safety, so
absolutely.
Like, okay, you know, he was more on the run support. He was more so known for his ability to come up and stop the run and make, you know, vicious hits. I never thought of him as an interception guy, so that's why I went with Deion. But he actually was my first choice, but I kind of went with you, Reggie, and said, hey, let's stay conservative. It would have to be probably Deion and, you know, and his showboating tactics and his way to the end zone. I'm a little shocked.
Yeah, Scott Case. I could see Scott Case now, because he was definitely that guy that if a receiver saw him barreling down, you probably weren't going to try to catch the ball if that was the case.
No, you probably tip it to him or hand it to him one. You didn't want to take a hit, and you didn't want him to take it. But I found it more surprising that Deion never led the league in interceptions in any season of his career.
Right, yeah, that is actually very surprising.
Yeah,
I would have never guessed that.
Neither would I. I really thought that, you know, because he was such a imposing force on your number one receiver as a shutdown corner, that that's how he made his living. And, you know, you paid when you tried to force it. So I'm a little shocked and taken back, too, that he never led the league, you know, once. And, you know, he's a Hall of Famer, you know, so I'm a little shocked at that.
Well, that, well, I guess, Coach, that goes to say, if he is, the considering the fact that the shutdown corner that he was, maybe quarterbacks would know better than to throw his way. So that would make sense that he wouldn't have had a lot of interceptions. No one ever gave him an opportunity.
Yeah, I agree. I think he just kind of he baited people, and then he would just, you know, with his speed and his ability, jump the route from some kind of, you know, crazy angle and or, you know, at a depth that would normally, you know, it would, you have to be, you know, a superhero to, you know, to close the gap. I think that's how he got a lot of his picks. If you probably go back and look at film, you know, he probably was coming from, you know, from a depth of 7 yards off when he was making those picks, closing in on high percentage routes like quick outs and hitches.
Right, and if any of his friends or family or anybody that knows either Dion or Scott, we'd love to have either of you guys on and talk about some of those incredible Atlanta seasons, among other things. But I did mention I gave you the choice, either the trivia or the latest retiree from Flowery Branch. So defensive lineman Perry Ejiri. A lot of people called him the busted first-round pick from a couple years ago. He has retired from the league as of earlier today. I wouldn't necessarily call him a busted first-round pick. I will say that maybe they were reaching when they tried to grab him so early. But, I mean, he was a good player. He was just not the star that they were trying to find at the time.
Well, Jeremy, I'm going to allow you to take the high road, and I'm going to keep it real for those people, for the fans out there. He was definitely a busted first-round pick. I mean, the guy was hurt coming out of college. I think he played solid maybe the first two or three games. He got hurt and just never really ever became that guy, kind of like Jamal Anderson, on the defensive Jamal Anderson that we drafted many years ago. But, again, I wish him the best, but I think we saw it coming even when he got re-signed. If you recall, the terms of his contract were undisclosed. And I think it was kind of a, hey, we'll see what you got, just for, you know, being fair. But I didn't really expect him to make the team at all anyway.
Yeah, we had kind of said we thought his days were numbered with the way they drafted and some of the free agents they had pulled in. But I figured he would get released and go be a small veteran presence at another team, or, you know, maybe help some rookies along. But I definitely didn't see him retiring.
Yeah, and Coach, a question about that. I mean, what is the benefit of retiring versus, you know, just kind of getting cut or allowing yourself to get cut? Is it perception? Is it giving yourself the opportunity to come back later? I mean, are there any benefits to retiring versus just being cut? I mean, how exactly does that work out as far as their contracts are concerned?
It's just strictly pride. I mean, it's easier to resign from a job than it is to get fired. So if you want to put it in terms that, you know, the average – person will be able to understand, you know, retiring gives you options of coming back. Once you start getting released from a team, it's harder to re-sign that player because he's been released. And one of the things they're looking at is, what did he do? What have they paid him? What is his salary going to be? How it affects the cap? So it's easier for you to retire. And as the season goes on, if you decide you want to lift the retirement tag, you can do so without a whole lot of red tape. But if you get released, then, you know, you're talking about some other things that have to go and play before they can actually sign you to another team. Who do we release next to bring him in? How do we make room for the money? And then with him being a number one pick, you know, what are the perks for that as that continue to carry on with you as long as you have a job in the National Football League?
Right, and I might add, Mr. Jerry, I shouldn't say that. He's a super nice guy, very nice to talk to, very, very easy going. So wish him the best.
Yeah, and, you know, now that he's not playing up at Flowery Branch or in the Dome, you know, maybe we get him on here to tell us what it was like to play with some of the guys he did and to, you know, just overall his perceptions.
Oh, absolutely. I love to see him and Mr. Brian Finneran, who has started to become very, very vocal. I love to be able to land those two get Jeremy, and I know you've got the connection to pull to get it done. So make it happen, Jack.
I will. I'll definitely. We have our people getting on top of that, and maybe I should go spearhead that movement. But as always, this will wrap it up for this week. Appreciate Coach Hill and Reggie Walker joining us this week. And if you want to contact us at the show, you can email us 3endzone@gmail.com. We're Endzone on Facebook. We have a nice, neat little page going there. On Twitter, we're at 3endzone, or you can catch me at the Impact 99. You can catch Reggie at
ATLEN73.
There you go. Coach, I believe you try to stay away from Twitter.
I do.
But for Coach Hill and Mr. Reggie Walker, I am your host, Jeremy York. We'll see you guys next week. Yeah.